Welcome to another episode of the Final Cut Grill. This is episode 044, if my records are correct, with Julian Ferris. Now, Julian is an interesting guy. He found me via Facebook, and please don't use Facebook. It's a bad way to reach me because I never check it. But he got lucky, and he's actually a local guy, and he contacted me, and he says, "Hey, yeah, you know, can I?" You know, we set up the interview, and he goes, "Yeah, if you don't mind, I wouldn't mind just coming to the office." And I was like, "Okay, yeah, sure, come on by." And so he came by, and we had a great talk. So the thing that's interesting about Julian, and you know, we try and talk to different types of people all the time on the show here, and Julian is interesting because he's brand new to the business. I mean, like really, really new, and he's only ever used Final Cut 10. So I thought, that's really interesting. We talk so much about the transition and moving from what, from 7 to 10 or whatever to 10. And it's like, yeah, you know what? I want to talk to somebody who, you know, I don't mean it to sound like this, but I'll say, you know, doesn't know any better. And I thought it would be interesting, and sure enough, it was. Not only that, you know, I was a little confused in the beginning here because I thought that he was, you know, like fresh out of college. Well, he is fresh out of college. He just started a little later than most people, and you'll hear all about that. I also want to say thank you once again to the good people at Premium Beat. I also want to apologize that all too often I say Premium Beats, and it's not Premium Beats, it's premiumbeat.com, and we're digging the fact that they're behind the show and supporting us. Still working on some of the tutorials. I realize I don't think any of them have been published yet, but I have two of them that might go out. I'm starting to look at it thinking I might want to make these a little better, so I don't know exactly when that's going to happen, but those are going to happen. But I will say they're really cool audio-centric tutorials. Yeah, digging it, and you know, I've been like going through the website and like thinking about all the different things I want to talk about, and so much stuff. Did you even realize Premium Beat has sound effects? Didn't even realize that. Anyway, I just want to thank the guys at Premium Beat for stepping up and supporting the show. It means the world to us. So I ask you, this is an unapologetic ad. Go check it out. If you've never looked at the music at Premium Beat, just go check it out. Trust me, you're going to like this. It's great music that fits really well into an edit. So without further ado, let's join up with Julian Ferris in the third story tower at Slice Editorial. Hello, hello.
Check, check.
Now, oh, you probably can't hear yourself.
I cannot.
This light needs to be turned on, believe it or not.
Oh, there we go.
Something's wired weird. Hello, hello.
There's that hard pan you talk about on there.
Yeah. Okay, so this is the most unceremonious intro ever. So, Julian, I was telling Julian this story when I was setting up this stuff here. So, at NAB, this guy was telling a story about how his wife was teaching his daughter or somebody, I can't remember who it was, how do you do the Christmas ham? And they go, well, you put the ham in the pot and then you cut all the corners off. And then they go, well, why do we cut the corners off? I don't know. Let's find out. So they contacted Grandma. Grandma, remember how you taught me how to do the Christmas ham? Yeah. And we put the thing in the pan and we cut the corners off? Yeah. Why do we cut the corners off? I don't know. Let's ask your great-grandmother. And great-grandmother said, you know, they went to great-grandmother, you know, remember when you taught me how to cook? Yeah. And we put the thing, the ham in the pan and we cut the corners off? Why do we cut the corners off? Oh, we had a really small oven. That was the only way we could get it to fit. So there are some the point of the story is that there are some traditions that are meant to be let go of, and we hold on to them because we don't know any better. And I think that it's a great metaphor about Final Cut 10. Now, so Julian is with me. So, Julian, you contacted me through, I think, Facebook. Please don't do that, okay? I hate Facebook. You're lucky I saw it.
I heard about it after that I sent that message. I was listening to whatever the second to last episode was.
Uh-huh.
And I just messaged you, and like 20 minutes later, you're like, yeah, my Facebook is just a Zed zone. I don't even check it anymore.
It's a cop website.
Like, oh, man.
Yeah.
And so, then I saw that it said scene. I was like,
the
oh,
only reason
it.
I keep it is because there are other Chris Fenwicks in the world, and I don't want them to have Chris Fenwick. I shouldn't say that publicly because they'll probably figure out some way to steal it from me. So anyway, you contacted me through that, and now you are I don't want to sound ageist or anything, but you're relatively fresh out of college, correct? You went
well. Yeah, I'm fresh out of college, but I'm 31.
Oh, okay.
So I spent my 20s looking for something that I wanted to do, and you know,
it's awesome.
So
yeah, fresh out of college, I just started late.
I started early. I stopped. It's one of those.
I think if I had continued through college, I would not have gotten done as soon as you did.
It's one of those things. I think it ties in nicely to just the way you started this about the ham and cutting the corners and everything. Yeah. And it's a perfect example of the kind of person that I am, because I've just always challenged everything that has been told to me. Like before I decided to go back to school, I worked as a sales executive selling automated CD and DVD duplication machines. And anything really? That I had to do, I would always be like, why am I doing it this way? Why am I doing it this way? Yeah. Just tell me like the reason, tell me the end result that you want, and then I'll find my own way to do it that's better. Because the thing that I've realized is a lot of people, they don't really put thought into why they do something. It's just, I'm just going to do it because that's just how somebody told me and somebody told them.
Well, I've said this many times. When you ask somebody, why do you do something? They either say, well, my mom told me to cut the corners off the ham. Or no, they'll say, I do it this way because I always have. And they haven't really thought about it. But that's kind of the way they did it the first time. Another way would be, I don't know. It just seemed to work. Well, do you do it this way every time? No, this is the way I chose to do it today. And then there are some people, and I think it's a very narrow thing, and I definitely fall into that, where I like hyper-analyze every step of the procedure to the point where I'm thinking about like how many characters are in a file name and will it make sense when I'm looking at it in a timeline with very short clips, because I'll probably only see the first 3, 4, 5 characters. So those really count. But anyway, I think it's interesting when you talk, especially with this whole Final Cut 10 world, where you talk about how/why/ who pushed you, whatever. So you went to San Francisco State. I have friends correct. That have gone there. I have friends that went there in the 70s, maybe earlier. I don't know. At least 70s. Locally, I mean, San Francisco State has a premier broadcasting department. But as I remember, it used to be very theoretical and not as much hands-on. Has that changed?
It's interesting because there's two departments there. There's the cinema department and then there's the Becca department, which is the broadcasting department. And the cinema department is the one that's really theoretical and it's really impacted right now. So the classes where you actually get to go and shoot your short films or whatever, those ones you don't get to as quickly. I have some friends that have gone into there and they haven't really done a lot of production work. And then in the Becca department.
And what does Becca stand for?
Becca is broadcast. I haven't even said it out loud in a long time. Broadcast and Electronic Communications Arts.
Okay, that makes sense.
They've added and they've changed it around, but that's what everybody calls it. And so the Becca department's really interesting. There's a lot of people that do audio only, and there's a ton of people that just love doing the radio work. And then there's the actual television studio stuff where you actually get to go and do a live show every week.
Really?
And then there's not actually a whole lot of theory. There's one professor there who's just amazing, Professor Connie, and he's somebody that I latched onto from the first semester, and I took every single one of his classes. I even created an independent study for editing. Because at the time, they were still teaching Final Cut 7. And I was like, that's end of life.
Right.
Not going to waste my time with the class where they're teaching.
So when did you start at San Francisco State?
I started there in spring of 2011.
Okay, right at the time Final Cut 10 was announced.
And at that time, I just knew that I wanted to do video production. I decided to do video production in 2008 when I was quitting my other job. I had to go back and finish my AA at a community college in Santa Cruz. And then in that time, San Francisco State had money issues, and so I couldn't go as soon as I wanted, couldn't get in that semester. There was issues with my second semester application because I didn't put in my high school GPA, which I did.
Paperwork.
Because I made it up. And so...
Psych! Got away with that one.
Yeah. So it took like an additional year for me to get in there. But then by the time I got in there, I used to be in a band.
Okay.
And I loved that more than anything else. But, you know, you're not going to make money playing
guitar.
You know,
so you this is so interesting because you are like at the very beginning of a story that I have heard hundreds of times. And so many people in this industry came from a musical background, being in a band, and it's so common. And the typical multi-camera, you know, crew that you put together in the Bay Area, at least, and I'm sure it's the same around the country, you could go around and put together a whole band. You ever play drums? Yeah, I play drums. Any bass players here? Yeah, I played. Okay, I need a lead guitar. Okay, you're in. Okay, let's go. We got a band.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. It's a nice transition. And the whole reason that I thought of going into video production too was because it's very similar. And the sales job that I had, I made a lot of money for somebody with no college education, 25 years old, whatever. And it just wasn't happy. I'd been in a band and I've actually had things to show for what I put my work into other than just money going into a bank account and starting over every single month at zero. And that's just ridiculous for a creative person. Go and sit in the same office every day for a month and you're just looking at these dollar numbers, and then the first of the month rolls around and it's zero again.
Yeah, that's really depressing, isn't it?
And so I did that for a while. I saved up some money and then decided, okay, going to go back. And the main thing is video production is really close to being in a band. You've got band practice, writing songs. It's like pre-production.
Yeah.
You've got the live performance that's going out and shooting. And then you've got editing, which is recording and mixing. Yeah. It's that same type of process.
That's a good analogy. That's really good.
And so it's really felt that same way. The one thing that is different and that I've been kind of bummed out, and that's why I've actually came here to do this in person, is because editing, you're just by yourself all the time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Especially for what I do. I'm either editing at the recording studio in Santa Cruz or I'm at home editing.
Right, right.
And so,
now, I've said it many times, and I don't know if you heard, I don't know what even day is today.
Wednesday.
So Monday's episode with Steve Navrat.
Yeah.
He's the guy that let you in downstairs.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And so we always talk about how energizing it is when you're around other editors and you can bounce ideas and share ideas and say, hey, I'm stuck on this. What do you think of this little passage? Why don't you do this? Oh, yeah, good idea. You know, and it's so great to get that instant feedback from somebody. And I think that clearly some people can just go into a dark room and close the door and never come out until a masterpiece is done. But I think those people are few and far between. And really, we're better when we're together. We're better when we share. I've been saying my new philosophy is that human beings, the human species, is a tribal species, and we are meant to be together, and we feed off each other. So so we should say that Julian actually drove across the bay from Pacifica, where he lived. Yeah, we're in the process of moving there, and he actually decided to climb to the third story Slice editorial tower here.
Yeah, I wanted to see in person that there were actually people editing with Final Cut 10 in the Bay Area, because you wouldn't know it. I've during school and after school, I'm probably just not looking in the right place, but. You know, anytime I see ads, it's like the only time they mention Final Cut 10 is they're like, not Final Cut 10.
Well, leave us your name and number and we'll give you a call. No, I think that that's really funny. I haven't noticed that. I haven't spent much time looking.
I've just been looking on Craigslist, and that's probably not the best place to look for work like that.
Well, I think that, editing platforms, I believe, are regional. San Francisco Bay Area is very premiere focused right now. Everybody wanted Final Cut 8. So they moved to Premiere, and now they have Final Cut 8. God bless you. I'm using Final Cut 10. But, you know, you go to L.A. and New York, and it's going to be primarily Avid, you know? So, yeah, I don't care. I looked at the feature set, and I said, yeah, no, this works better for us. So you started school in, you said, the spring of 11.
2011. I hadn't even decided I wanted to be an editor then. I was taking my very first semester at school. The main class that helped me decide this was the intro to media aesthetics. And the teacher, Professor Connie, I'll mention him a million times.
That's fine.
Amazing. That's fine. Teacher. And so, teaches George you
Mangan.
Everything.
George Mangan was my amazing teacher.
There's always somebody there. Yeah. And so, at the end of the semester, I was like, okay, I think I kind of want to do editing. And then semester finished, and I ended up getting a job at the Apple Store in downtown San Francisco.
Okay, and so you couldn't miss that.
And once you get there, it's too hard to pass up
the
all
one
the
on
good
Stockton?
Deals. Yep, Stockton
the
Street.
Yeah,
the flagship.
Did you work upstairs or downstairs?
Both. I did. I worked on the personal setup team mostly, so anytime somebody buy a new device, I'd help them set it up. I tried to avoid sales because I did that my whole life. And so got the job there like a week later. They're like, oh, Final Cut 10 came out. I was like, cool, I'll just use that. I had used iMovie twice before that because I was like, I should just start editing and things.
That first semester, did you do anything in Final Cut 7?
Did nothing. I did no shooting. I did no editing.
So what did they teach? You said introduction to
media aesthetics. So that's like
what the hell does that mean?
So there's so much. I mean, that's the first semester through that. It's all beyond anybody's comprehension, and teacher just point to you and be like, "What did I just explain?" He's like, "I don't know what that means." But it's, you know, the
can you like audit classes like that? I'd be interested in seeing some of that.
Probably. I mean, I think you could come in. Maybe if you talked about what you did, I think that would probably. Cool.
Are you kidding? There's a million. If you want to hear what I do, there's like hundreds of hours of podcasts out there.
Yeah, but having somebody come, I mean, yeah. Hey, if you want to do that, I'll talk to them.
No. I'm actually just, I want to hear what he has to say.
Yeah,
but whatever.
So, I'll give you a little summary. It's basically the book. If you really want to look into it, it was written by Herbert Zettel, who actually taught there before.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Sight, Sound, Motion.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
That book.
And so, we used that book when I was in school in the mid-80s.
Yeah. So, we just went over that book in extreme detail.
Okay.
So, light, shadows.
Yeah, yeah.
Same rule of thirds.
Stuff. Okay.
Magnetism of frame. All that
okay.
stuff that drives you crazy.
All right. Yeah. That's funny. Does anybody, question to the audience, does anybody remember that book? Hey, speaking of which, question to the audience, let me just say this, a couple of things. We added a new feature to the Digital Cinema Cafe website, and on the right-hand side, there's a little tab. And if you click on that tab, you can actually, you got to turn on the flash crap on your computer, but you can actually leave an audio message up to 90 seconds until I pay more, where you can ask a question. So if you want to ask a question about or make a statement or whatever, or say I'm crazy for using Final Cut 10, I won't play those on the air, but please go do that. That'll be interesting to see if people do that. So a little tab on the side. Okay, Zettel. Basically theory stuff.
Yeah.
So then you, summer job working at the Apple Store, mm-hmm. Final Cut 10 comes out. What did you think?
So, I mean, coming from nothing, I never even thought about editing before. This was my first exposure to it, other than when I edited two little things in iMovie just before that.
Right.
Like, I decided, okay, I want to do editing, and I didn't have any footage, so I downloaded some videos off YouTube and put some music
to it. Oh, another quick question. I want to get this background.
Yeah.
When did you approach Professor Connie about making your own editing focus thing?
That was the third semester.
Okay.
So that was when I really.
So you're done with your first semester. Mm-hmm. You started mid year.
Yeah. And then, so the second semester in the fall, I didn't do much editing then either. I had the white MacBook, and Final Cut 10.0.0 ran on it. You could use it on there.
Right.
You couldn't really use it. It opened.
Yeah. Gotcha.
And then it got to some update and it didn't work. So around December, out towards the end of my second semester at State, I got an iMac.
Okay.
And then that's when I started really getting into editing more and doing more stuff with it. And so that was when I approached the professor to do an independent study on editing. And we titled it Aesthetics and the Art of Editing. And I approached him and I was like, look, the classes that are being taught here are really about software. I don't care about the software. I don't want to learn about the software. I want to learn about the aesthetics of editing and the art of editing and everything.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
And so we went through that. He made me put together a syllabus as if I was going to teach a class.
Interesting.
And gave me some projects. And that's when I started shooting video, too. And because to edit, you have to have something to shoot. And I didn't have anything to shoot. And turns out I really love shooting video, too. And
oh, really?
They go together so perfectly because as a new shooter, I was really crappy at it. And then I would get the footage and I'd have to edit it and it would be awful.
Well, I've said for years that every shooter, even the ones that I know that I've worked with for 20 years, every shooter at least once a year, maybe twice a year, should have to cut something they shoot. And every editor should have to shoot something. Like, again, once or twice a year. Because as an editor, because that's all I do. I never touch cameras. But as an editor, you go, oh, this footage is awful. Blah, 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 blah. How come you didn't get more coverage? Well, you weren't there. And you didn't realize you're running out of light. We're running out of time. The client is yelling at us. Security held us up in the lobby for an hour and a half, so we lost 90 minutes of time. You know, there's a million things that you're not exposed to when you're just sitting in your nice comfy chair in the suite. And vice versa.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff. And that's a really difficult part about editing the footage that you shoot, because when you're editing somebody else's footage, it's fine. Swear at it all day long, all you want, and it lets it out, whatever. Somebody else sucks. And then you're editing your own footage, and you're like, it gets really depressing, and you can get really... Because even if it's good, you're still editing it, and you're like, I should have done this, 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 or why didn't I do that? And so there were times...
You know, post is all about making decisions.
Yeah.
I mean, it's decisions that, unfortunately, are mostly about compromise.
Yeah.
Well, I'd love to have this, but this is what I have.
And my biggest struggle, there was a music video that I shot and directed and edited and came up with the concept and everything. And that was, I avoided editing that for a while because I was like, I don't want to see how badly I screwed this up. And I didn't screw it up too badly.
Yeah.
It turned out pretty good, but it was one of those things.
Was it like a single camera narrative or multicam? What'd you do?
So it was, we had a performance shot at the Boom Boom Room in San Francisco.
Okay.
And it was, we did... I had my main camera. That was the one that I was using. And then we had two other additional cameras to do some other shots there. And then we went out and shot some of the story out on the coast at one of the beaches there. And so there was this stuff that had to be intertwined between the beach, the show. And
how did the multicam come out? Did you, and then did they do it? Was it a live performance or did they lip sync it, or was there an audience?
We lip synced it to the track that was recorded at the, so this was an artist who recorded at our recording studio. And then we went out there and we played along to that. And one of the things that we've done too in the past is you shoot it at 30 frames per second and then you slow it down to 24. So the song was 80%, faster and then they were kind of freaking out about playing it that way. But so we did a whole bunch of crazy different cameras and we're shooting it all with DSLRs and different DSLRs, which makes grading that fun.
So you took the soundtrack, you sped it up 120%, I think you have to do.
Yeah.
Some 118 or something.
Yeah, I didn't do it.
And then they play it to that. Okay, so I'm going to offer up a free idea here.
Yeah.
I'm going to giving it to you. Anybody else who is actually listening to the show, you have to like just turn your volume down for 2 minutes. I don't want anybody else to listen to this idea. So here's the drill. You get a bunch of, you go to an event, a live concert, and you tell people, get your iPhones out, don't be an idiot, hold it horizontally, have like a dozen or 20 or however many people shoot the stage with their iPhone for the performance, and you could do the fast music thing trick again, and because the iPhone's going to shoot 30, so now you dumb that down to 24. But the trick to it is, well, how do you get all that footage off? There's a piece of software, and believe me, I get nothing from this. It's called Phone View, and it's sold by, I think, Ecamm. But it's like $20, and you, when you attach a phone to it, as long as the person enters in their gink, gink, gink code, you have access to the whole file structure. And you can get into the photo library, and you can see, oh, that's an MOV. You drag off the MOV, you don't have to sync it to iTunes. It's an easy way to get a file off of an iPhone. And I've always thought that would be a fun gimmick to do, especially if you have a bunch of people and you actually put some up on stage And it's just a million iPhones shooting from a million different angles to cut between.
There's an app that actually does something like that. I don't think I have it on my phone anymore. Oh, but what it does is it's not even like that. Basically, you don't even have to know people. But if you're at an event and somebody
Editor is probably quite possibly the case.
It's yeah, exactly. That's once
it's
again
called. Why I think I know what that is.
Yeah, everybody shoots
Collabracam.
Something like that.
That kind of looks like that?
No, I had a different one.
Oh, okay.
I deleted it because I wasn't ever going to use it.
This is compelling
we can delete this.
No, I don't delete anything.
I know. I've heard that before. I've heard people say, we'll delete that, and then I've heard it, which means it wasn't. And so, yeah, but it's kind of cool because everybody can shoot it, and then it gets uploaded to this website, and then anybody could watch it in their browser and then multicam edit.
Get out!
Yeah.
Oh, you got to send me a link.
I'll figure out
that's
what that
awesome.
Is. It's somewhere.
At
in
any
here.
Rate, at any rate, I just always thought that would be a good idea. So anyway, if you guys have your volume down, you can turn your volume up, and you can now listen to the rest of the show. I know that doesn't make any sense. Believe me, I'm not that retarded. Yeah, I've always said that would be fun, though.
Yeah.
Like mini, mini multicams and very, very low budget. And it's not going to look great, but if you had a couple of good cameras in there to cut back to, it would be fun.
And it would be cool if you're doing it for like a rock concert, punk concert, anything like that, and you've just got the crowd out there. And then you get those really cool kind of POV shots from the crowd without having to have the big camera there that's going to get... Although iPhones are just as expensive as cameras now.
Yeah, but everybody has their own.
Yeah. That's nice.
Done. Okay, so you did the summer thing. Mm-hmm. You another semester later, you did the editing. You had to make a syllabus.
Yeah.
And then how did that go? I mean, you were basically by yourself, quote unquote, teaching your own thing, or did he help you?
I would meet with him once a week, and I also asked him if I could go in and sit in the media aesthetics class again and just watch it. Because the first time, first semester, it's just all over your head. So I got to go back and watch that again, and he wouldn't call on me to answer questions. So I got to watch everybody else shiver that time.
And that's really interesting. Yeah. Did you like completely get so much more out of it?
Oh, yeah, way more. Like watching it again and seeing the stuff that he talks about just made so much more sense, and it just makes things click because it's like a math class, basically. Like some of this stuff gets really far out there in terms of comprehension when you're trying to just understand the terms and what people are talking about. You're like, what is this? And so going through it a second time, it just made things click, and I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean,
makes sense now.
Yeah, that's actually really interesting because I've always said that like at 17, 18 years old, you're basically too young to go to college.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you'd be much better off going and getting a job, maybe selling CD duplicators, finding how much you hate, you know, having that job for a living, and then decide, now I really want to go back and I'll be a lot more serious about what I'm doing.
And if you go back to school after working in the real world and giving presentations where you're selling equipment that costs $60,000, when you have to go and give a presentation in front of a class, that's the easiest thing ever. There's no pressure. And seriously, going back to school and doing this has been one of the easiest things that I've done. Like,
there's many movies about older people going back to school and just, okay. So did Connie give you any grief for wanting to use Final Cut 10?
Oh, absolutely not. He does not care. It's for him, you could use camera, whatever, anything you want to use. At school, I never learned about any software, any hardware, no, nothing. It was all about going out and practicing, using whatever you have, and just either getting stuff from the equipment cage there or using your own. And I bought all my own gear. I bought a GH2 and some lenses and all of that because I didn't want to have to just check things out. I wanted to have it with me so that I could learn it. And if
In school, the cameras were about the cost of, you know, a 5-year-old Toyota at the time. The edit system was the cost of like a new, you know, Acura, and you couldn't do that. It was just ridiculous. I want to read you a little bit of a letter, talk about people participating in the show. This is from, I don't know how to pronounce your last name, Craig, but we'll call you Craig. Craig. Hello, Chris and Alex. I've been listening to DCC since the beginning and to Final Cut Grill, despite being mainly a premiere editor, and I really enjoy your shows. Why, thank you. The reason I'm reaching out is a couple of years ago, I relented after hearing Chris, that would be me, saying, just get out there and make something over and over again on Carl Olson's Digital Cinema, Digital Convergence podcast. And then he says, so I did. 3 years later, I just released a feature documentary called Found in the Forest. Now, I haven't watched it or the trailer or anything, but he did send me a link. It's foundintheforest.com. And he said, yeah, I did it because you said to do it. So like you're saying, you just got to get out and do something. And by doing, you learn. And I think that there is a huge fear that people have. Like even the fear that you mentioned about your music video, like I'm kind of afraid to start cutting it because I don't want to find out how badly I screwed it up. Well, here's a really good bit of advice. Everything that you can imagine screwing up has been screwed up tenfold worse by somebody else at least once. So it's probably not going to be as bad as you think it's going to be. Just do it, you know, yeah. Just do it.
Well, and that's what we did, and that's what I did at the end of that semester when I did, I think it was at the end of the semester when I did the editing course. I was looking for something to do. I didn't want to waste my summer like everybody else, and I wanted to actually shoot something, and just randomly ran into somebody in just the hallway at school. I was just like, what are you doing over the summer? He's like, I think we're going to do a short film. And I was like, cool. And he's like, yeah, we might need some PAs or whatever. And I was like, okay, I'll message you on Facebook. And I messaged him on Facebook and I was like, I want to shoot and I want to edit. If you need somebody to do that, I'll do that, but I'm not going to do a PA. And so we had a meeting, a couple other camera people showed up for that. And I was like, look, I want to shoot everything. I don't want to share this with anybody. And to do that, I was like, I didn't say that to anybody, but I thought that. And I was like, all I got to do this is I just have to show up every time. And I shot everything.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot to be said for that. In my college experience, I had the enormous benefit of the fact, my second college experience that I also dropped out of, I had the enormous benefit of living with my parents. And they were like, you know what, just get your act together and you can live here. I volunteered for everything. Just showing up is half the battle. Showing up on time is half the battle, and showing up and doing good is half the battle. I know that's three halves, but like I said, I dropped out of school.
None of us are good at math. That's why. Although you got to do a little in editing. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that was fun, and we shot it, and that was summer of 2012, so I don't know what it was before the 10.0.6 update. But
so you said you wanted to shoot it. Did you also edit it?
Yeah.
So you basically just showed up and said, I'm going to make your movie for you.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, did the people, and you said, what year was this?
I think it was 2012. It was.
Okay. So summer of 2012, that was the year I did my BMW tour thing, which some people have heard me talk about. So I'm assuming you cut it in Final Cut 10 because you said that's all you've ever cut in.
That I've ever used so
far.
Did
the people that you were working with have any influence or any opinion about that, or did they just not care?
They didn't care. They didn't know. I was the only one there that knew anything about editing. You know, we had a director, we had sound guys, we had producers, set, but I was the one there that was the post-production person. And all that mattered was that I was able to get it to somebody to color grade and get it to somebody for sound design.
Okay, so I've been reading Reddit a lot lately, and there's an abbreviation mm-hmm. on Reddit called TIL. Mm-hmm. Things I learned. Mm-hmm. Things yeah. I learned. If you know post, you can be a hero in film school. Mm-hmm. Things yeah. I learned today.
Yeah.
It sounds like nobody wants to actually do the work. They just want to take the credit for having produced or directed the work.
That's fine because I like doing that work. It's really fun. And it was horrible. It was a horrible experience editing it because it was the first time that I'd ever really edited anything. I didn't really know how Final Cut 10 worked. And we got, like, while we were shooting, I still didn't have my hard drive set up properly.
Right.
I still just had my internal drive and my iMac.
And yeah,
I didn't have any external
quickly.
Drives. Yeah. So I didn't start editing until I got my external drives, and I put in a solid state drive in my iMac, took that apart, put it back together. That was that's if you can do that and you have an old iMac that's not with an SSD, that's the best thing you can do for it. It's so fast.
Yeah. So you have do you have the thicker iMac?
Mm-hmm.
Not the
yeah,
not
I
these
have the
thin
2011
guys.
One.
Yeah, we have a couple of those too. So yeah, I will concur. The SSDs are actually coming down in price and they're very affordable. And if you, that's probably what, that and putting more RAM in a computer probably the two nicest things you can do to it.
And it was nice. So that my first experience editing was with SSD Thunderbolt. And so I've got friends that are editing with FireWire on other things, and I've never even experienced that. I've never experienced anything but this fast.
So what drives did you get then?
So being in school, I didn't have a lot of money, and so I looked around at some of the best options, and one of the things that I found was at that time, there weren't a lot of Thunderbolt options, and it was really expensive. And so what I did was I got those Seagate Thunderbolt docking stations.
Yes.
And so they have the docking station and then they have the hard drive on it.
Yep.
But I worked at the Apple store at the time and we took a box apart and looked at it and it was just a regular SATA connection. So I just ordered bare drives.
Right.
So I just put it in there, put some rubber bands
around it. You're not getting the ultimate speed out of the Thunderbolt because you're dealing with a single drive.
Yeah.
But you're certainly getting the maximum speed.
It's still really pretty fast. I clock it at about 180 megabytes per second, read and write average.
Yeah.
And it,
which I think you can get that off of a USB 3 drive.
I don't know. 2011 iMacs don't have that.
You keep talking.
Oh, so, that's right. You don't have USB 3. USB 3 is awesome.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I totally walked away from the mic. USB 3 is like one of my new favorite
better
things.
Better than Thunderbolt.
No. Thunderbolt's better. But the thing is like there's so many peripheral. Well,
right.
There's so many drives that you can get. I mean, we just bought like a 1 terabyte little shuttle drive for like $79 USB 3. Mm-hmm. And you can get data in and off of that thing pretty quick.
Yeah. And so, whoa, there goes your mic.
Oh, yeah.
There it is.
Okay, here we go.
So I ran into this issue. So I got everything edited. It actually didn't take that long to edit. You know, it took a couple weeks to get the rough together and then fine-tuned it. And then all of a sudden, I don't know what it was, and it was definitely probably my mistake. But all of a sudden, all of my media was just gone. Offline or something.
What?
If you go to fcp.co and look back to then at my comments, you'll probably figure out what I did wrong. I haven't looked at it, but I had this issue and I couldn't figure it out at the time where just saw the red screen there. And I don't know. I really have no idea because I didn't know anything about
it
at the time.
Well, did you ever get it back?
It wasn't connected. So I tried to relink it. Like it didn't get deleted. Let me clear that up. It wasn't deleted or anything. It was still there, but the project just lost connection with it somehow. I don't know what happened with it. Some of them were there. Like, I think the ones that were rendered were still there, but other ones weren't. I don't know what I did. And what I ended up having to do is I went... Oh, yeah, that's way faster. 433 megabytes per second.
That's the
read and write.
That's a Pegasus.
Yeah, that's nice. And so...
Sorry. Drive envy.
I know. We've got a Pegasus at the recording studio. And
you should take it home to the video to cut video on because they don't need it at the recording studio.
The nice thing right now is I've got the Seagate Barracuda docking station thing, and I'm in Santa Cruz and I'm going to Pacifica and I'm driving back and forth, and that's just super easy and portable, and I've got backups set up in each location, so it works really well, and it's fast enough. And so I had this issue, and what I ended up doing, just because I didn't have time to figure it out, we needed to get it to the guy who was going to color grade it because he was going to do it quickly, but it didn't happen quickly, so it could have been more time. But anyway, I just ended up going and clicking on a shot, finding it in the event browser, and then just putting it back in another timeline. I did that for every shot for about 200 clips.
Yeah, that's crazy town. So
did, like 3 hours.
Did Relink not exist then?
It existed, and it would do it, but I think the problem... And this is what's stupid about Final Cut sometimes is it's like, that's not the same media because it was a synchronized clip and maybe that had issues with it or something. And it's like, it has to be the same length and it has to have this.
Yeah,
everybody's seen that and
that
wanted
is
to
true.
Smash their
computer. And I know that somebody has a utility and somebody I'm sure will tweet what that is. There is a utility that is more forgiving than the application itself. But I think that the guy who wrote it, it's a very ingenious little bit of kit, but it doesn't work all the time either, and so he got tired of trying to support it, so he just said, take it for free. So he just, I think he made it for free, so that way he doesn't have to try and support it. That's cool. It doesn't work. Sorry.
And I mean, you know, technology.
You're getting your money's worth.
Technology is technology. Nothing ever works all the time. And so it's just a matter of what
works. I don't understand best. What the logic is, what Apple's logic is for the, we'll call it the Nazi tactics in terms of the relinking. I don't know why it has to be so literal and precise. Can't it be more forgiving? Because everybody has a story about this is the file link and it just won't link.
Yeah, that's something that's just crazy. But I haven't had that issue many times since then.
Well, I will hardly say at all, I will say ever. That when the relink does work, it works pretty good. I think I talked about this a couple episodes ago about relative linking versus absolute linking in terms of the directory path structure. And I think that is still something I'd like to see changed. So you don't, because if you did that, when you moved a project from drive to drive, you would never have to relink again because the media is in the same relative position to the library file that you double clicked on to launch and blah, blah, blah. So please Apple, let's fix that. So how did the movie go? Was it feature, short? What was it?
I mean, it was the first time that we'd ever made anything, any of us. So right. It's really pretty bad. But it ended up being about 22 minutes long.
Okay.
And then we ended up finishing it like 6 or 7 months after I finished editing it. And we went back in and we changed some things. And it was just really slow paced. And the dialogue was just kind of slow and everything. Just, you know, first attempt at ever doing anything like that. But we're like, let's try and make a web series out of this. And let's see if we want to go that route and try something. And we didn't do that. But we split it in two. And that was bad, too. And then I posted it on Reddit. And I was like, hey, tell me how much this sucks and what's wrong with it and everything. And
did you get constructive feedback?
Oh, yeah. No, I got good stuff. I went into the editor's section in there where you never hear people. Although, over the past few months, people have been talking nicer about Final Cut 10. I've noticed since 10.1 came out.
Exactly. And this is what I've been saying since the beginning of this show back in November. Prior to 10.1, I've been saying, give it 6 to 12 months. The conversation is going to be totally different. And being today is April, May, so this is now the 6th month.
Oh, yeah, we're all antsy.
Well, I think it's changing. I do think that, again, San Francisco, at least at the corporate level, is very much a premier town. But even still, the conversation is changing. And when you – I mean, all you got to do – seriously, all you got to do is look at the last 43 episodes of this show and look at the breadth and depth of the type of people that are using this, you know, happily. Happily, except for episode whatever it was where Steve Miller came and talked about Premiere.
Yeah.
But so take the number of episodes minus one, and that's how many great interviews there have been of people that are happily using Final Cut 10. So, you know what? I don't even care, because the bottom line is I have this tool that's very powerful, works very well, and we are getting a lot of work done, and we're doing it extremely efficiently.
Yeah, and so I'm, once again, from that perspective of I've never edited in anything else. And I've
you know,
wanted
what would be
to.
Really interesting is to make Julian Ferris cut a piece in Final Cut 7 and then come back.
No.
And then come.
I've watched – I'd try Premiere, but I wouldn't do 7 ever. I will never touch that. It's 32-bit.
Yeah.
There's no way. I use at least 8 gigabytes of RAM. Normally.
Yeah. No, I know.
I watched, we did stuff in school, and I watched other people edit, and we have this award show at the end of the year where everybody's work is on there. Right. Me and my friend who edits in Premiere, we always talk back and forth about that and stuff. And I watched him edit in 7, and we needed to like move some stuff around, and he'd have to select everything and push it over and then bring the other stuff in. And because it was an award show, so we had B-roll, and then we had to put the awards in that we were getting like the day before the show. So we had just to put that in there. There's no magnetic timeline. It doesn't just slide out of the way. You have to do all of these extra steps. And I was like, this is horrible.
What? Yeah. You know, it's interesting. If you really know Final Cut 7, and most people don't, there are keyboard shortcuts to select a passage of stuff, and you can hit a ripple delete or a ripple cut where it will cut it out of the timeline and ripple it shut. And then you can arrow over blink, 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 blink as the proper, you know, appropriate number of clips. And then you can do a ripple paste, which is essentially the same as what the magnetic timeline does. Ripple cut and ripple paste. However, most people don't know it does that. And all Apple really did with the magnetic timeline is reverse the priority of ripple copy, or excuse me, ripple cut is now just cut. Mm-hmm. And ripple paste is now just paste. You know? And all that's all they really did to give us the magnetic timeline. Because 7 did it. And I think a lot of people don't read. Because I know when I used to cut, things that were just like a string out of clips, and we were trying to fashion a story together, you know, a narrative. And people say, well, let's move that over here. And I do the ripple cut and come over here, ripple pay. And I can remember many times people go, whoa. How'd you do that? I go, I know my tool, you know, but I think that a lot of people don't realize that Final Cut 7 did do that. And it's really not that big of a deal that Final Cut 10 does if you understood that. Mm-hmm. It's just that it's the default setting now.
Yeah.
Which is weird.
And that's interesting from my perspective because that's what I came into. I never knew anything else. And I still had trouble with it because there's still times where, oh, this is moving this and this is moving that. And there's just, it needs a little bit more attention. But once you kind of understand that and you come up with your workflow and when you're, I wish that you could lock the timeline.
Actually, I think, agreed. I will say, though, that I think that 90% of the time, it actually doesn't need a whole lot of attention. There are certain times when you go, whoa, yeah. What happened? And it's because you're not cognizant of where your connection points are from your secondary storyline.
Yeah, and this is something that I actually realized yesterday, and it's most of the time none of these are issues, but when a lot of this stuff becomes an issue is when you're finishing a project and you're polishing it. That, like yesterday, because I was thinking about what I wanted to talk about on here, and that's something that has really started to bother me is there's I'm a perfectionist and I want to get things as perfect as possible, and it's really not there in Final Cut 10, like in terms of a lot of things, like putting text on there, on the screen, and wanting to have grid lines come up so that you could just align multiple titles there and doing stuff like that. Or
let me give you a pointer about video editing. Don't ever use the titler that's built into the video editor.
Or even, not even those. Yeah, I realize that because I've just started making my own stuff and putting in there. You can throw anything on there and use Slice X, make a little lower third on there and do that. But even if I wanted to line that up, there's not a nice way to line these things up. There's no grid that goes over the screen.
Seriously, I never lay out text in Final Cut. All text that goes in anything I cut, if it's static, it gets made in Photoshop. If it's animated, it probably gets made in After Effects. Mm-hmm. Some stuff, very few things. Some things get made using a motion template.
So what if you have like a bullet point list that you've made in Photoshop?
Keynote. I do those in Keynote.
You can do it in Keynote. Because
if you have to key it over live video, you can't do that.
Right.
But 90% of the time, I would say that bullet point lists are just over a solid background or a photographic background or a shot of the set, blurry out of focus, blah, 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 blah. Make that, bring it into Keynote, lay it out. In Keynote, what you do, and there's a whole tutorial. There's a tutorial on my website called Fast Bullet Points. And what you do is you lay out your text. If you want to deal with bullet points, learn how to do it in Keynote, okay? Mm-hmm. So what you do then is on the export, there's a little checkbox that it says, make a separate image for each stage of the build, okay? And I'll give you a pointer. If you're going to do this, and I won't go into it now, at some point I need to make a video about this just to bitch to Apple, but do not use the latest Keynote. Use one later, the 2009, whatever, because it has a better naming convention the current naming convention is very, very dangerous. If you decide that slide number one wants to have a build instead of not being a build, it will ripple all of the slides after slide one and it'll change all of their names. And if they're already laid into your timeline, you're kind of screwed.
Right.
But anyway, yeah, I do stuff like that in Keynote.
And but still, I mean, that feels like it's a workaround. There are times where, let's say, there are a lot of people
No, hold on. It's not a workaround. It's actually faster.
Well, let's say there are people that are doing animated titles in motion and bringing them over, and they just wanted to do something. I just feel like there should be a
motion has all kinds of little snappy guidelines.
Yeah, why can't Final Cut have that?
Because motion does.
But why can't Final Cut
it
have that?
It probably could.
It should.
It could.
It's just one of those little things. It's these little details. And you know, I've obsessed over learning about Apple. I think they're an amazing company. The way that they do things and the way that they focus on the attention to detail with everything is incredible. And I feel like there's just a lot of little things now that I'm – like when I'm in finishing mode of everything I'm working on right now because I'm moving out of my house and I'm going on a road trip across the country for like 2 weeks. And so I have to finish everything right now.
Which route are you taking?
We're going to go visit my aunt and uncle in like Glendale, Arizona.
Then
we're
going to go. Okay, so you're going down to 10.
Yeah, then we're going to go to Santa Fe, Oklahoma, St. Louis.
Oh, Columbus, you could do 66. Youngstown.
Probably, yeah. That's what we want to try doing something like that.
Do 66. You just hit everything on Route 66.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we want to do that. Bring my camera and do some time
and then
lapse.
You'll get up to Illinois and you'll get on, I think they call it the Lincoln Highway, whatever. Mm-hmm. And you can go through like. You know, what is it, Ohio, Indiana, whatever, because you're going to New York, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, if you're going that way, you should go Route 66. Yeah.
It's. I mean, we've left a lot of time in the trip to just kind of have some fun, so it'll be a cool trip.
2 weeks is not really a whole lot of time. I did Route 66 several years ago, and I spent 4 weeks going from Chicago to Santa Monica.
I want to go on another road trip over the summer and do some more. I just ordered the full setup of the Edelkrone slider. Did you see that at NAB?
No, I didn't.
It's the most amazing slider I've ever seen. You gotta watch
extender
it.
Extender thing.
Yeah. You got it with all the motion control stuff. That's exciting.
Nerd.
Yeah. Okay. So, but that's just something that I feel like in terms of just getting to the finishing touches when you're doing things in Final Cut. And I feel like if they're offering these things, it should be perfect, you know? If Steve Jobs was to go into that room and see anything like that, like he ever really cared about Final Cut? I don't know. But if you would, it's one of those things where it needs to be Apple standard.
I will say that the guidelines and the guide assist in Keynote is world class.
Yeah, and even the graphics. Like, I made a video, and it's on my Vimeo. It's just this little 30-second motion graphic thing. And as the text is sliding, it's just jittery, jittery, jittery. And then on Keynote, you can have it go by as fast as you want, and it's just smooth all the time. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand why it's not like that in Final Cut. It could be frame rate. It could be...
Yeah, I think... Were you using, like, a motion template or something to slide it around?
I was keyframing everything.
Huh. Yeah, I don't know.
So I don't know.
Again, if I'm going to animate stuff, I do it in mm-hmm. in After Effects.
Yeah, it's see, this is where I'm coming from. I just want to do everything in Final Cut. I just want to, but I got to go out and do some more things.
Yeah,
I would like to do everything there, just because for the small projects that I do, the 2 to 3 minute corporate type stuff, mm-hmm. band videos, whatever. It's nice to just keep everything in there because when you have to come back to it later on or anything, it's just all there and. It's just a nice, smooth workflow. And I don't like, I'd like to get into Resolve 11 when that comes out because that seems like it's a really cool finishing tool for grading and everything with all the new editing stuff in there. But for what we do and for these types of projects, it's just overkill.
Yeah, I don't know that it's overkill. I just know that I don't really have time to learn Resolve. And every time I've tried to install it, I wasn't able to. So, you know, I'm that stupid. But, I think that I've talked about this. I think the thing that's more interesting is what the apparent crossover that there appears to be between Final Cut 10 and Resolve.
Yeah.
I don't know what is going on there, but you know, let's just say these guys and these guys are looking over each other's shoulders or something.
And that's what I'm more excited about. Resolve 10 seemed pretty cool. I was like, okay, that's getting there. It's just when you're doing that, I haven't really looked into the media management too much just because I haven't had time to do that either. But it seems like, okay, important to Resolve and then send to Final Cut and then back to Resolve for the end. It's just a different way of managing the media and everything. And right now, what we do, I keep everything in the Final Cut libraries because they're small, self-contained little projects, and then we put them on another drive and archive them.
Yeah, I think that there are compelling reasons to keep your media in the library. We don't actually do that.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
And there's a lot of I think there's stronger reasons to not do that. It is imperative, however, that you have a unified folder structure,
mm-hmm.
and that you use that folder structure for every single job that you do, so things are the same. But I don't like the idea of importing stuff into the library. It's too confining for me. And I'll give you one example is the thing that I did with Stephen Luxick in mm-hmm. Hawaii, where we were both sharing one hard drive.
Oh, yeah.
And he was importing media through his laptop and storing it on my RAID, which was attached to my iMac, in my media folder, not in my library, of course. And then he would make he would string that stuff out, make me XMLs, save the XML on my hard drive attached to my iMac, and then he would look across the room and go, hey, you got a new XML. And I would open that and I would have his whole timeline.
Oh, yeah. For that, I would totally do that. For the situation that I have right now with what I'm doing, I'm the only editor. I'm the only one that's ever touching the footage. If, you know, whenever I move on from that job, it'll be contained super easy. And now with the Arctic Whiteness Library Manager.
That's cool, isn't it? I've been using that a lot.
So easy. I love just deleting stuff on there, too.
I love deleting stuff.
That's the funnest. That's the funnest. Just delete, delete, delete. All right, 40 gigabytes.
Yeah.
And that's pretty cool.
Yeah, we do that even on the big Pegasus raids.
Yeah.
You know, I think I threw out like 500 or 600 gigs of stuff the other day.
Deleting stuff is the funnest thing in editing.
So actually, let's back this up. So yeah. Arctic Whiteness is a little application. Well, that's the company, mm-hmm. and they make a thing called Final Cut Library Manager. And when you open it, it sniffs all your drives, kind of like the old Final Cut did. It shows you every library that is currently mounted, and it gives you a little graph that shows how much media is in your library that is optimized, which by definition is based on another piece of media that it should have access to. But it shows you your optimized media, and it also shows you all of your rendered files. And again, the render files are things that can be easily regenerated, although it might take time, mm-hmm. when you open up that project. So the render files do not need to be archived. The optimized media, as long as the original media is still nearby, does not need to be archived, because it's just a duplicate of something that's already there. So you can actually select that stuff, tink, tink, delete it, get a whole bunch of your drive space back, and then you have a much smaller job folder that you can archive or put away or just throw stuff out because you don't need access to those render files
anymore. It's just fun to delete stuff. And they went crazy last month, too. Every time I would open it, sometimes multiple times per day, they're like, here's another update. Here's another update.
What's the current version, like 1.64 or something?
No, but it's up there. And you said that it would show you all the mounted drives. Now it'll show you any drive that it's ever scanned before.
Oh, that's right. There's a little icon that says, here's a drive. Oh, that's a nice way.
All grayed out and be like, oh, it's on that drive. So when you're looking for something, you can do the search bar and you can find it. It's really, really
snap.
Cool.
I did not even realize that. That's
amazing.
Very cool.
I bought that when it was still in beta. It was $6. It's like $10 now.
Oh,
and it just makes the life so much easier. That, like, with
that
Slice
is a
X.
Really, really, really good tip.
Yeah.
Yes, it does. I noticed that and I didn't realize, I guess that drive's not attached. Mm-hmm. And I should have put two and two together, but it's showing me what's on it.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And does it keep track of every library that's on it?
Every library. Every library, it says what drive, and then at the file path name in the actual application, it says, oh, this one is on Thor.
We're doing tests right now.
This is a fun thing we can talk about, too, is what everybody names their drives. And so since it's all Thunderbolt, I've decided that from here forward, I'm going to name them all after Greek gods. So I started off with Thor.
Okay, so cute. I'll tell you, I hate stuff like that because it has no reference to chronology. Every drive that we have is numbered.
Yeah,
makes we have sense. 129 3-terabyte drives in the other room.
Yeah, that's not even close.
I'm not going to come up with 129 ridiculous names.
That's not even close to what I'm dealing with. So yeah, I mean that's the thing, and that's where I think a lot of people.
How many drives do you have?
Probably like 10.
Oh, okay. Not even close the other way. Okay.
No, yeah, no. Yeah, the other way. Yeah, and so that's the thing. I mean, that's where Final Cut 10, I think, is hitting this market. Like, for somebody like me who's just getting started, who's going out there and doing this, and things are very simple with the jobs that I have where I work. There's not a lot of edit. Yeah, there's a lot more stuff on there.
Yeah, don't look at
this
screen.
It's got another update.
Yeah, don't look at this screen. I actually have a beta version of something that's not real yet.
I can't even tell. It's across the room.
Yeah, a bunch of disconnected drives, and I just attached 10. So here's a couple of projects. Here's all my projects that are on.
Sorry, I should talk into the microphone. That's my portable Thunderbolt number 10. Mm-hmm. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So now I will quit this software. I will unmount that drive. I will unplug that drive. Oh, this is good radio.
It's exciting.
Oh, that's very cool.
And there's the search.
Yeah.
On the top, so you don't even have to do that. And since
So Arctic whiteness is even cooler than before. That is an awesome tip.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, you guys had to listen to 57 minutes of podcast to get there. I'm going to give you one more tip, and then we should wrap this up. So we were talking earlier about, I said, as long as you understand where your connection points are, this is something I've been dealing with a lot lately, where I'm taking, so a lot of times I will take a soundbite, or two or three, and I am crafting a story, and I'm taking an interview of somebody who is not a public speaker, so they ramble a little bit, of maybe a few two ums and ahs like I do in every one of these stupid shows. And so what I'll do is I'll string out those three soundbites, and then I start massaging it, and I pull out the things. I pull out the bad bits. Hopefully there's enough of it left over in at least one spot where I can drop a lower third on the guy. But over the rest of it, I'm going to put a bunch of B-roll. Okay, so the B-roll will be connected and probably storylined, you know, Command-G. But it will be self-contained for that thought of the larger piece, okay? Now, if there's many edits in the interview section, I might compound clip those, Command G those, compound clip. I'll have to give that a name. Right. So it'll be like, you know, dude talks about horse, whatever. And then here's the interesting bit. Quite often you're on your secondary storyline and you'll want to dissolve off of a shot into the discussion of the horse. Okay. And so maybe the first shot is a meadow and here comes the horse. All right. Now, if you're going to dissolve from the previous portion of the interview, that horse shot probably overlaps the previous soundbite, okay? Mm-hmm. By default, your connection point is going to be the first frame of a piece of video. So if you then pick up the horse interview, which is a compound clip called horse, and I move it in my timeline, the B-roll in that secondary storyline will be connected clip to the last 1 second of the previous soundbite. Mm-hmm. So here's a little tip. This is a free one. Learn in instances like that, and this should be a visual thing, and I'll do this. You do command option click on the secondary storyline, and it will change your connection point. And it doesn't have to be the first frame of the secondary storyline. It can be a second or two or three into the compound clip that is the horse soundbite, the now very much managed horse soundbite, because I took all the ums and ahs and blah, blah, blah out. And now that B-roll is connected to that soundbite, and it has a little extra 1 second overhang that will cover the last second of whatever you put in front of it.
Right.
And that, when you learn that little trick, it's really cool because you can manage where you want that connection point to be. Anyway, that's a little freebie.
Figuring that out's really useful. There's lots of cool little things like that. And, you know,
That falls under my category of the timeline kung fu.
Yeah.
You know, those are just those little tricks. So let me ask you this then. I'll ask you the closing question I've been doing for the last few episodes. If you had the opportunity to sneak in at Apple, what would the feature?
Yeah, let me pull out my list that I've been writing down and pick one of these. You already mentioned the one that I wanted the other day, so I'm not going to use that
one.
Which
one
about
that?
It just being able to dictate and transcribe the
Yeah, now that was your
Yeah, that was me.
Oh, let's talk about that for a second. We're going to go long here.
Hey,
so,
that's fine with
so
me.
So I saw this tutorial a few weeks ago, and you were sitting there, and you said, "Hey, Apple, how come you can't use Siri in Final Cut Pro?" Now, what you were doing is you have your notes. You explain it.
So this was at work. I didn't have iCloud set up there. It didn't work the same way. But the way that I normally do it, I have iCloud set up on my computer and on my phone. So type anything in your notes on your phone, and it just automatically goes to the notes on your computer.
Right.
So you can't do it on your computer with Final Cut running. It won't transcribe properly. So I just press play on the interview, and I'll just have the phone dictate. I'll press the little microphone button on the iPhone,
boop, boop,
and then it'll start recording. I'll just hold it up next to the speaker or just put it on the desk wherever the speaker is. And when I'm done, everything's transcribed. And then I click done, and then I go to my computer, and it's on my notes. And then I just mark. I don't remember if I do favorites or if I do keyword. I think I do favorite, and then I just put it in the notes.
Yeah.
And it should just do that.
Right.
It should just be a button when you're importing, because especially with Mavericks, there's that whole language packet that you can download that's like a gigabyte or two.
Right,
and just
right.
All of that. And so hopefully they're working on that.
I got to imagine they would be. You're right. Because all the technology is theirs. Why don't they just wire it all together?
And that's what I really feel
so
like Final Cut.
Let me ask you this. When you were doing it, what kind of, if you had to grade the accuracy of it, approximately what were you getting? 50%, 80%, 90% accuracy?
I mean, it's always going to depend on the speaker
and the
how
accent,
clear
yeah,
they
sure.
are and all of that. And there are some times that are better than others, but 70, 80, 90, in that range,
right.
It'll vary. And it really depends on how detailed you want the transcription to be. Sometimes just looking at something, and if it's, you get some really awesome stuff in there that's just totally off.
Well, Premiere, again, to be fair to our friends at Adobe, Premiere does have a feature where you can take a bit and you actually have to run it through the media encoder or something, and it will analyze, giant air quotes here, analyze the text, and it's very comical too. The other problem that it has is it gives you no, I should say, the last time I played with it, it gave you no capability to edit that text or even to put in some extra carriage return so you could break it into paragraphs or whatnot.
See, here's the...
But it's also time-coded. So, like, all you had to do, if you could find the phrase you wanted in that body of text, you could just click on the word, your timeline jumps right there.
That's really cool.
Wicked
I feel
cool.
Like the way I would want it implemented in Final Cut 10 is just to take the selection, keyboard shortcut, transcribe, and then it makes like a favorite and puts the notes in there. I feel like it should that the event browser should be more like a spreadsheet. I feel like Final Cut is kind of a combination between a spreadsheet and a presentation.
Right.
With the event browser, there's so much information that you can put in there, and if it just acts a little bit more like a spreadsheet, that would be nice. And then bring that into the timeline index to where you can have all the same metadata from the event browser in the timeline index. I do a ton of multicam stuff, and
right.
I label all the cameras, I put all the names in there, and then when I'm in the timeline index just trying to like select some clips for some reason, it doesn't give you all of that information.
Doesn't it?
No. No, like like camera angle, camera name, anything like that.
There could be more data in the timeline index.
Yeah,
okay, so you got a whole list.
Thing.
Give me
yeah,
one more.
I got a whole list. Let me see what I got here. While I'm talking, While I'm looking, I'm just going to tell you that I think that when you're selecting a typeface, even though you said you don't use the titles in Final Cut 10,
right.
Come on, let me just hit the letter and have it go to that section of the...
That's crazy.
Yeah, I'm going to stop using that. Like I said... Roles and
there's two great tutorials on my website about using Photoshop. There's a brand new feature in Photoshop Creative Cloud called Generate Asset. And if you haven't looked into Generate Asset, watch that tutorial on my website. And then there's another thing called, Poor Man's Dynamic Link or Almost Dynamic Link. I can't remember what I called it in terms of linking your After Effects renders to Final Cut, which is very cool.
Oh, this is a stupid thing. Once you create a custom role, you can't delete it.
Oh, really?
No, you can't delete it. And then here's another thing. In the role editor, up top in the main one where it has the roles, it's video, audio. When you go to add one, it's audio, video. Like, video's above the audio in one part, good. And audio's above video in the other one. And that's just disappointing, because Apple is known for their attention to detail.
Here's one for you. Here's one for you. When you're in the effects browser, okay, and you... Like, one thing I do all the time is I use the gain plugin and I use the limiter plugin. So you open up the effects browser, you click in the little fine tool, and you type the word gain. And then you're like, oh, where's my gain plugin? And I realize, oh, I was accidentally in the transitions browser, not the effects browser. So then I hit from the transitions screen, I click on the effects, and my find request is not persistent. It clears out to zero. And then I have to type it again.
Yeah.
And that's okay that it does that. But in other parts of the software, it is persistent. And I can't remember exactly what they are, but it's not consistent around the software. And I think, and I don't know anything about making a piece of software this complicated, but I would imagine that there are multiple little subdivision teams that are working on things, and they could share notes a little more. From now on, every Monday, all the teams have to eat lunch together, and they need to share stuff on a whiteboard.
And I thought I heard that Logic is in like Germany.
Yes, it is. That's because Logic was a very popular music software that was written in Germany, and Apple bought them lock, stock, and Two Smoking Barrels and made them into an Apple company.
Well, here's the thing that I would want to change, and this just happened yesterday. I actually have video of it because it's crazy and it annoys me all the time. With Final Cut 10.1, you could eject your SD cards while it was open and everything like that. And so I was like, cool, I've got one SD card, and then I've got another one through a USB hub and everything like that. And first of all, when you're importing them, you can't assign any metadata, which would be really great, so I could know which card is done
importing.
Everybody
knows that. Yeah.
But then when I'm importing now and I select all of the clips and I go to change the camera name, as soon as that one clip is imported, instead of being, you know, 60D, it goes to EOS HD again. It deletes any metadata that I've entered, and it goes back to normal. So I have to sit there, and you really can't do any metadata entering while it's importing, which is a big thing that's being sold on. And I don't know if other people are having problems with that, but it's on both of the computers that I use.
That's
crazy.
Yeah, I got you. I do think, you know, in Final Cut 7, there was a very elaborate window on importing media where you could import and assign metadata at the same time. And by metadata, I mean a custom name, not metadata like we have now. But you could customize the name, and it was pretty cool. The problem is it almost took a PhD to actually work it properly, and very few people actually did work it properly. And I think that's very possible that, you know, that was like one of those things like, yeah, you know, we're still trying to work out a better metaphor for that, because it wasn't good before and we want it to be great. Mm-hmm. And like many things, you know, like when they finally added multicam, it was much better than it was before.
Multicam is amazing. And that's the thing. And I've just had to have a lot of patience over the time, as everybody else has over these past 3 years. And it's, if you understand Apple and the way that they work, it's going to be a really good program. It's really good right now. But just think about what the future of it's going to be, because this is
I'll tell you the thing that for somebody like me, as old as me, the thing that's most interesting is meeting people like Julian Ferris, because you are the next wave of people that will put me out of business, right? And so you don't care. You just need to string pictures together and put some audio underneath it. And yeah, it'd be nice if you had better guides when you use the crappy text tool, but whatever. You know, you have access to everything that I have access to. And, you know, I will tell you this right now. If you did want to move east with your friend that you're taking back east, I know people that are hiring Final Cut 10 editors.
Sold.
You know?
That's what I'm really hoping the future is, that eventually people are going to evolve, because it is the thing that I really love about it. And there's all of these other issues with it that are so minor, and it's any software has it, but it's just an incredibly creative tool. When I'm sitting there trying to put a story together, it's so easy to just move everything around and just throw stuff at it and just get really crazy and just get really creative. And especially with Slice X and Track X, that is just absolutely insane. The stuff that I can do with that now, the way I use the object remover in every shot, I use tracking. There's so much stuff you can do with that, and just have that all inside there. And that's what's really cool about the future of Final Cut, is I think what Final Cut is it's an iPhone. It's the iOS. It's this operating system.
Somebody just said that to me the other day.
And this is what it's going to be.
Wasn't that an episode name?
I heard a long time ago somebody saying, I don't know if it was there or somewhere, but it's basically an editing operating system. And that's what I think is really cool, because if you look at the iPhone and you take away all of the third-party apps, it's a solid phone, it's a solid operating system, and it's really good, but what really makes it special is the third-party plugins. And that's what's really going to start happening. And with the FX Plug 3, I'm still waiting to see more stuff come out with that. But I feel like this is where a lot of things are going to happen. And the key things that you need, like X to Pro, being able to get an AAF file, which people are still complaining about OMF. I don't know. I've never used OMF, so I don't know what the big deal is.
And you're an audio guy.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we've got full Pro Tools rig at the studio. So I send the AAF out. They mix it. They bring it back. It's gotten so much better. It's way better than just going from importing the XML from Final Cut to Logic. Right. That's a disaster. But when you now that if you properly assign roles, you export the XML, you run it through X to Pro, you open it up in Pro Tools, and it's really pretty nice.
Do you get all the handles and everything?
Yeah.
So the iPhone of editors is what this episode will be released on Monday, the 8th or 9th or 5th. I don't know, whatever it is. And the iPhone of editors was Friday's episode, which has not been released yet.
That's why I haven't heard it.
Which you haven't heard it yet. So it's actually in the queue and ready to go out Friday morning. So well,
nobody's heard this one yet either.
So. Yeah. So anyway, I just took everybody on a weird time travel thing, and I apologize for that. Anyway, Julian, if people want to find you on the internet, what's the best way to get in touch with Julian Ferris?
Just go to my Vimeo page. I'm going to work on a website here soon, but I haven't had time for that.
And, yeah. Well, you're too busy cutting stuff and making money with Final Cut 10.
But yeah, go to vimeo.com/
Julian Ferris, F-A-R-A-S, yeah. Not like Bueller, no. Spelled different than Bueller, yeah. Pronounced the same.
Yeah.
Julian, thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
Take care.
So that was Julian. It was great that he decided he wanted to come over and hang out at the Slice Editorial Tower and have that little chat. Always interesting to hear different people's perspectives from different levels or different, levels of experience. No doubt it was fun listening to Julian. So thanks again, Julian, for coming over. I also want to say that if you haven't, please definitely go check out Premium Beat. You're going to be hearing a lot more about them in the coming weeks and hopefully months. And later this week on Friday's episode, I have a very interesting interview. I'm actually going to interview one of my clients, a guy I've worked for many, many years. And I just kind of closed up that deal. Yeah, like big money. No, that I just made those arrangements this evening. So that's going to be fun. That'll be a fun interview. I promise. Interestingly enough, another Aussie. So I can't get away from the Australians here on Final Cut Grill. Anyway, thanks for listening. Go to iTunes. Leave your comments. I love hearing those. I love reading them. And Apple, please give me some way that I can respond back to those people. It'd be awesome if I could. That's it for this episode. We'll talk to you more later on Final Cut Grill. Later.